Where in the world is Justin Wong? It's Overseas Experience, your international news update on 95BFM.
With the 2020 Olympics officially kicking off tomorrow a year late in Tokyo, here's some related news for you. The Ugandan weightlifter who went missing from his country's Olympic pre-training camp in Japan has been found almost a week later, a couple of days ago. 20-year-old weightlifter Julia Sekitoleko arrived in Japan mid-June before being told he did not make the quota for the Olympics and he was supposed to return to Uganda 2 days ago. Sekitoleko left his hotel in the town of Izu Misano near Osaka last Friday, leaving behind his luggage and a note saying he does not want to return to Uganda and instead wants to work in Japan. Japanese police said Sekitoleko went to the central city of Nagoya by bullet train before traveling to the neighboring prefecture of Gifu, where he was intercepted by officers. Sekitoleko is already heading back home, while Uganda's foreign minister, Henry Oyem Okello, told Agence France-Presse that his conduct was, quote, unacceptable, and the Ugandan government has apologized to their Japanese counterparts. But this is not the first time that athletes went missing and later claimed asylum at host countries during the Olympic Games. At the 1956 Olympics in Melbourne, almost half of the Hungarian delegation defected to the West after a revolution in Budapest against the Soviet-backed government was crushed militarily by the Soviet Union. And Dr. Johanna Mellis is an associate professor in history at the Maecenas College in Pennsylvania, and I spoke to her about what happened back then earlier today.
My research mainly focuses on the case in 56 of the Hungarians, although some Romanians did defect at that point. So what happened in 1956 is that Hungary was under communist rule during that time. It was during the Cold War. And about one month before the 1956 Melbourne Olympics were about to begin, so about 30 days-ish before, that was when there was a massive revolution in Hungary in an attempt to either reform or overthrow the communist government, kind of depending on who you're talking to is involved in the revolution. So there's this major revolution against the communists, and there's like bloody fighting in the streets. And as soon as it happened, I mean, athletes kind of were freaking out and for obvious reasons trying to figure out are they going to the Olympic Games or not. And the team does end up leaving to go to the Olympic Games. And but the revolution was ongoing. And so when the athletes and when the entire Olympic team left for Melbourne, Australia, several of the athletes had already realized that they were not going to return to Hungary. You know, they didn't know what life is going to be back with the revolution happening. They didn't know what the safety of their families was like. And then they arrive in Melbourne and they didn't find out that the revolution had been brutally crushed by the Soviets. The Soviets had come in with tanks and had crushed revolution, but they didn't know that until they actually got to Melbourne. And so that's when athletes started talking really amongst each other and with coaches and with sport officials from the communist state about what they were going to be doing. And so what happened is about 34 Hungarian athletes and coaches from the Olympic team and 4 Romanian athletes who lived in Transylvania, which was an area that used to belong to Hungary, so ethnic Hungarians, they all end up defecting to the U.S. specifically. And what happens is that there is a sort of secret operation between the CIA, the American CIA, which is the sort of secret service, and the State Department and Sports Illustrated. And these organizations work together to bring these Olympic athletes to the U.S. and to allow them to pay for them to fly over and for them to sort of work around the asylum rules in the U.S. But without the assistance of the U.S. government through these channels, these athletes would not have been able to do that. Now, there were some athletes who stayed in Australia. There were some athletes who later on went to like West Germany and some other countries. But that is, as far as my understanding, is the biggest case of sort of mass athlete defections from a country as a result of being at the Olympic Games. And that is the thing about the Olympic Games is it provides opportunity for athletes and coaches to leave the country to go somewhere where they can more easily slip out than if they were inside their country, if they were back home.
I'm surprised that the Soviets didn't have any minders like North Korea did for their athletes.
Yeah, so I mean, so it's different depending on which country. So certainly within like the Soviet, actually the Soviet Olympic team at the 56 Olympic Games, they decided to not allow their athletes to stay in the Olympic Village, and instead they stayed on a ship. And that was partly because they feared defections, and they feared other issues as well. The Hungarian case is different because many of the sport officials who were employed by the communist government, who were members of the Communist Party, they were very sympathetic to the cause of athletes. And actually, the main communist sport official who led the delegation, he claimed in his memoir after the fact that he actually sort of tried to stay in Melbourne. After the Olympic Games, he claimed that he needed a special medical procedure that could only be done in Australia. And the communist government is like, no, you need to come back. You know, you can't stay there. So they're very sympathetic. And actually what my research shows is that because of so many athletes leaving, I mean, there are 34 Hungarian athletes, and then there are hundreds of Hungarian athletes that leave the borders outside the Olympic Games. So it's really this mass exodus, and it actually causes sort of a softening of political repression and policies within the sport community, which actually ends up being really beneficial for athletes in Hungary compared to places like Czechoslovakia, certainly more so than Romania, Albania, and the Soviet Union. So this is where the real specific circumstances of each country really matter. And certainly the North Korean case is very, very different. The Cuban case is very different. And really also just goes to show that there are different kinds of sort of authoritarian governments, different kinds of sort of communist and socialist governments at play here.
Were the Hungarian athletes back then could be seen as a nationalist symbol that could even bolster the 56 revolution?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Yeah, so actually, there's sort of a sort of split memory, I would say, is that the communist government in the decades after, they viewed a lot of these, they simply stopped talking about these athletes, and they wiped a lot of them from the records books as a way to kind of pretend as if they didn't exist, right? Because they obviously don't reflect well on the communist state that they defected and never came home. But the memory of the athletes kind of lives on as a little bit of sort of a, I don't want to necessarily say a memory of resistance, but people kind of cling to this memory as like an example in which like people voted with their feet is what historians like to call it, where they said, we're not going to take this anymore. We're going to leave. But certainly after 1989, when the Cold War ended and when communism fell, there was a real kind of resurgence. And this had started earlier in the 80s, but there's a real kind of spike and sort of memory of resistance to communism. And so this case of the Hungarian athletes who defected is kind of, people have seen it as having as being more meaningful now than perhaps it was even then. It's more openly talked about. It's more openly discussed. It is seen and portrayed by some people as sort of anti-communist resistance. And really, the athletes were just looking to get out. They were looking for different opportunities. Not all of them were particularly anti-communist. So a lot of them are really getting a sense of, you know, where can I maybe make better money? Where do I not have as much repression?
So just like this Ugandan weightlifter.
I definitely think so. Actually, that was interesting. But sort of the similarities in terms of athletes feeling like maybe they would have better opportunities elsewhere, which is definitely in the case of this Ugandan weightlifter, where, you know, there's political repression at home, but then there's also real economic crisis in Uganda. And so that is where a place like Japan, which seems a bit more stable, may appear to offer more opportunities for someone like him. And this certainly happens in the Hungarian case. But what happens in the case of in 56 is that a lot of athletes, they come to the US and they realize that the government is not going to support them for being athletes. And so actually a lot of them end up living in poverty. And some of them actually end up going back to Hungary because they want to see family, but also because they want to sort of continue the career, their sport career, and be supported by the state. So it's the sort of thing where like there's an appearance and there's a belief that they may have more opportunities, but it's sort of hard to get a sense of whether those opportunities are going to pan out.
Interesting that you raised that some athletes eventually went back to Budapest. How many of them did they, who defected first and eventually returned?
Excellent question. So there are 34 athletes that left, and I can't remember, but it's either 7 or 8 who end up returning home, which is a small number, but I want to say that is still like a quarter or a little bit less than a quarter of the Hungarian athletes who left with the delegation that came to the U.S. There are many more that I haven't been able to account for because their names are not, I haven't been able to find them, but a lot of them, some of them return because they're sort of coerced to return. Some of them return because they miss their families, which is a very legitimate reason. And then some of them kind of end up floundering a little bit in the U.S. because they can't find a job, they can't find a coaching position, or they can't find a position as an athlete. Because in the U.S., you know, in order to actually be an athlete full time and be able to support yourself, you needed to either come from a very wealthy family or be a college athlete, because there was no money for professional athletes to really support themselves by being an athlete. So it's a small number, but I think it's pretty significant that many end up returning.
I think the official IOC position is to not talk about defectors. Are you surprised to see, well, defections at the Olympics not being widely discussed?
I'm not surprised. And that's because, you know, the International Olympic Committee claims that it's apolitical. It claims that it's apolitical, which is a lie, because the entire operation of the IOC is a political foundation in terms of convincing everybody this is the way to compete in sport, these are the uniforms you should wear. All these things are all largely Western white cultural norms. But also it claims that the IOC claims that it does not have a role in commenting on domestic political issues. The thing is, though, that's not the case either. And the 1956 case is an example, because during the revolution, before the Olympic team actually leaves, the IOC is really worried that the Hungarian Olympic team is not going to be able to make it to Melbourne. And so actually there are really important figures within the IOC that essentially contact like the French government and contact like an airline company to ensure that the Olympic Committee can make it to Melbourne. So they are directly intervening in domestic politics to make sure that the Olympic team makes it over there. So I say it's not a surprise because it's not a surprise that they don't directly comment on it, but they do sometimes sort of implement moves behind the scenes to make sure that their version of the Olympic Games actually happens. But again, they maintain this official stance that they're apolitical and that they're not going to comment, for example, on whether Uganda is a good place for an athlete to be or whether it's Japan, right? Because they don't want to upset political leaders. But when it serves their own purposes, they are willing to intervene and kind of do what they want to do.
Overseas Experience with Justin Wong, only on 95 BFM.